Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Hello, wherever you are around the world. It is coming up to the time that we're expecting to see cars on track. Let me introduce our co-conspirators this weekend. Joining me in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre is Jeremy Shaw. Hello, Jeremy. Are you ready for another busy day with action from Sebring?
Never been more ready, John. Absolutely right. Yesterday, it was a bit of a late start, but it was well worth the wait. I think it was an interesting session. It wasn't full dry, but it was close to it. And I think all the teams there, yeah, they'd have liked to have a bit more preparation in the dry, most likely. But hey, look, it could well rain again today. So I think it was a very productive session all around, and no major dramas.
Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. No major dramas for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship runners. What have you been able to find out in the time since we last spoke? Because we did, as Jeremy rightly says, have a very late session last night with the weather delays.
Yes, we did. But what was quite funny is I heard back from more drivers once the session was completed, and it was well past most of their bedtimes than I did when the session was actually going on. Spencer Pompelli wrote me back when I had asked him what happened to Rob Ferriel at the end of the session. He went off between turns 2 and 3 and then parked the car safely off track, well off track, actually, at turn 7. He was then joined by Joao Barbosa at turn 7, who had a massive lockup with all 4 tires. And that ultimately resulted in a red flag, which then had Robbie Foley stopped on track 2 at turn 13. So it seemed like all the dominoes fell at once. But as far as Rob Ferriel goes, it was a loose wheel on the Audi R8 for the Hardpoint Racing team. So they got that little blunder out of the way.
Left front, wasn't it? We thought that after they'd gone in for tyres, that there was either a suspension failure or, more likely, a bit of finger trouble there. And he did a good job, actually, not to do any more damage to that car, I thought.
No, he did a really good job. Spencer said he picked up on it right away and pulled the car off to safety. It was the amalgamation of all the cars coming to a stop at that point on the track that resulted in race control ultimately ending the session a little bit early. But as far as today goes, right now, sunny skies, beautiful weather conditions out there, just a tick under 80 degrees for those of you who speak Fahrenheit. It's not going to stay that way, though. We do have rain in the area. And if you look at a map, my home is currently getting completely harassed by a rainstorm. That storm is going to move through. It's going to stay lower than this circuit as far as more south. But there are pop-up storms, and we are expecting them to start hitting around 2 p.m. this afternoon. So qualifying might stay dry, but it looks like those rain tires, those Michelin wets, are going to get some use during the race.
We have the sound of race car engines, and out of the standard pit lane through the RFID chip reader for the Michelin tyres. By the way, if you don't speak Fahrenheit, air temperature 27 degrees Celsius and track temperature exactly the same. Humidity 83%, but it's July and it's Florida, central Florida at that. Wind speed, the flags are moving around a little bit, 5 kilometres an hour. If you are just joining us, perfect time. A little bit of high cloud, some shadows on the track as far as the cars going round. So we have got a bit of UV getting onto the track surface. So we'll keep an eye on that track temperature. Live and exclusive on IMSA Radio on RS2, which is the permanent home of IMSA Radio. 365 days a year, 24/7 IMSA content on RS2, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. So always some IMSA content on there. Thanks for the kind words about our Doug Feehan celebrating 100, the first 100, as we talked about victories in IMSA for Corvette Racing. That was set up by Ryan Smith. Ryan, thank you for that. I know you'll be listening. It's gone over very, very well with the fans. Doug at his absolute best raw emotion and passion for the man who's been at the head of the Works Corvette Racing programme since its inception, of course. And if you haven't heard that yet, go to radio-show.co.uk and use the search feature. Just put in Corvette Racing, it'll pop up. We'll be playing it, give you another chance to hear it through our weekend here on RS2. Just waiting for Tim Gray, our London producer, to tell me what gap that's going to go in today, because I've got a feeling he might be recycling that into the playlist. Well, cars out on the track. Now, this is... forgive me, because I can never read the schedules, but this is one of those split schedules, Jeremy, where we've only got a certain amount of categories, and within those categories, and a certain type of driver who's allowed out for the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, and the reason you can't figure that out is written in code, always, the IMSA sessions.
I'll send it to Bletchley Park.
What it really means is that the session goes from 10 o'clock till 11:15. For the first 15 minutes, only LMP2 and GTD bronze-rated drivers, i.e. the non-professionals, can go out there onto the racetrack. And then for the final 15 minutes, it's only DPI and GTLM, which are all professional classes. So that's basically the long and the short of it. So for 45 minutes, it's all skate. First 15 minutes is just right. GTD and LMP2 bronze, and the final 15 minutes just the pros.
Yeah, fantastic. It's the middle 45, as I said.
Fairly straightforward.
No, I know.
Schedule.
I always get confused when I put the schedule to one side, because it just doesn't figure with me. Out on the circuit, a few people have gone out.
Gone out and come
straight back in again. Green flags around the circuit. It looks like Aaron Tielitz is going for a lap in the number 14 Mobil 1 sponsored in Vassar Sullivan Lexus, who, Jeremy, were very good indeed at the return to racing, let's call it, at Daytona a couple of 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, indeed so. And in fact, he and Jack Hawksworth now lead the WeatherTech Sprint Cup Championship, because of course Aaron drove with in the sister AIM Vassar Sullivan car at Daytona for the 24 hours. So in the overall championship, he's not going to be on the same level as Jack Hawksworth, because they finished a position behind them in the first race. But in the Sprint Cup, they're going to do all these races together. So they are tied for the lead in that championship, with the teammates Townsend Bell and Frankie Montecarlo in second place coming to this weekend. Just to reiterate for everybody who's listening in, this round for GTD is a WeatherTech Sprint Cup race only, so it does not count for the full season championship.
Yeah.
By contrast, LMP2, this is only their second race of the season. The first race was at Daytona for the 24 hours.
Riley.
Yeah, we are being attacked.
That's all right. He just wants to hear the race cars, Jeremy. That's fine. He's a proper racing dog.
I was walking past. He wants to go for a walk with them, and he can't, unfortunately. at Daytona for 24 hours, that was a round only of the endurance championship from LMP, not the regular season championship. So this is the first regular season championship round for LMP2. Got it? There'll be a quiz afterwards.
Yeah, understood. All sounds particularly sensible. In fairness, actually, we're making light of this, but what we've got to say, Jeremy, is IMSA have put together a absolutely brilliant calendar to try and fit effectively a season's worth of racing into the time that we've got to use for the rest of the year, and still continue to satisfy those customers, i.e. racing teams and racing drivers, who want to do just the longer races or just the shorter races. And somehow, and I'm not entirely sure how, after a couple of revisions and a bit of chat between themselves in the paddock, but they have come up with a really considerate and well put together calendar.
Absolutely right. And for the LMP2 contenders, you know, they don't want to be doing... It's basically the bronze-rated drivers that are the the spenders there. They're the guys who make it happen in LMP2, because you have to have a bronze race driver in the car. So therefore, it's got to be somebody with fairly deep pockets. And they don't want a full season championship. They want a limited schedule of races, as you say, to be able to go either for the endurance or the sprint. So I think it's a great schedule all around. Hopefully, we can maintain what we have right now. I think there's a few question marks flying around, depending on what happens with the COVID-19 pandemic. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I think they've done a fabulous job and done a really good job also keeping everybody updated and being one step ahead of the game at all times so far.
So Jeremy Shaw, he's in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre with me, John Hindhoff, our VP. Racing Fuels pit and paddock reporter is Shea Adam. She very much socially distanced, of course, from the drivers and the PRs, but getting the information through. And for that, we have to thank all of the team, public relations and media personnel who have been helping out. Thank goodness, Shea, that we've got such things as email and Twitter and all the other applications nowadays. I can't even think about doing this 15 or 20 years ago at effectively very much arm's length. And you've had a great response from everybody in all of the IMSA paddocks.
Yeah, I really have. I've got contact with at least one person in every single car in the field this weekend. The team PRs have just been invaluable, and whether it's through text message, WhatsApp, Instagram, Skype, Twitter, you name it, Facebook, people are reaching out in every form and fashion, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. But it is funny that my phone has to be pretty much constantly plugged in, because it is pretty much constantly lit up. It's a good feeling.
Let's take a look at some times as they're starting to come in. I'd think that the first part of this session might just be used, Jeremy, for a bit of general testing. There is no FP3, is there? So we go straight into qualifying later on this afternoon. We'll have that in sound and vision for you wherever you are in the world, USA or further afield. So we might be getting a little bit of fuel data, a bit of tyre wear data, because there's been precious little of that in terms of long run running here. Because of the conditions yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, quite a few drivers didn't get out at all yesterday. All of the cars were out there, bar one. The only car that didn't go out yesterday in that evening practice session was number 38 Performance Tech Motorsports LMP2 car. And we heard from Brent O'Neill, the team principal there at Performance Tech, who said, look, his drivers, Carl Masson and Cameron Castles, they both got a lot of laps around Sebring in the wet. They really weren't too worried about that. They got good data to work from if it is wet tonight, so no point in risking any damage. And, you know, for them, I think that was a smart move. And already this morning, you know, Carl Masson's up there to second place behind Patrick Kelly, who's done an excellent job in the number 52 car for PR1 Matheson Motorsports to be the early pace setter here with a 153.9.
Big day of racing today. Qualifying for IMSA WeatherTech, they did have that one session yesterday, final practice session, then qualifying, then the race all coming today. The IMSA Prototype Challenge qualifying literally rained out yesterday, or weathered out, I think it's fair to say, but their race still going ahead today, and we'll be bringing you that as well in sound and vision. And if you're at the track listening in, our thanks to our colleagues on the audio at Sebring International Raceway for patching us through onto the PA system. And if you've got XM Sirius in your car or your RV, then the whole of the WeatherTech race will be on XM Sirius as well. If you go to their website and search for IMSA, it'll give you the channels. And it's only 206 and 216 and 206, but I say that without any knowledge, as if that is true this weekend. I'm sure the responsible adult will put something on my screen in a moment and tell me exactly where it is, but you can find it on the XM SiriusXM website relatively easily. So already down towards that first 15 minutes of the bronze and silver drivers having had their time on track. PR1, another improvement Jeremy Shaw at the top in LMP2.
Is there?
152.937. Yes, that was the last lap around for Patrick Kelly.
There we go. Yeah. Yes, absolutely right. Yes, so Patrick Kelly's really doing a fine job there in that car. He was kind of on the fence a little bit. Well, no, he wasn't on the fence. There was no doubt in his mind he wanted to do this race. But he had some convincing to do, let's say, with various parties, I believe, to make sure that he was clear to come here. He's 52 years old from Los Angeles. Patrick Kelly, I wouldn't call him a gamer, but he was I think basically designed the Call of Duty and Modern Warfare games. If you're into gaming, which I'm not, he is, and is a industry leader there, I'm told. He's also done some racing. He did a few IMSA GT3 Cup races back in 2008, so 12 years ago. He did a few races there. Actually finished third in the championship that year. He was out of racing for quite a long time, but made a comeback last year. Did one race and is all excited to go for this season. He had a really good first race of the year at Daytona, and he is excited and ready to go.
And it was, yeah, thank you. It is 216 Sirius 210 XM later on today, if you are so equipped or you have to move around to listen in to us. Sound and vision, of course, we're available with no breaks as part of the RSL coverage. The racing will be available in the US via NBCSN. And the WeatherTech race, it's going to be Calvin Fish, AJ Allmendinger, and who is the third? That's just gone out of my head. That's terrible. Never mind. I'll remember in a moment. I know Brian's going to be in the pit lane at Sebring after his duties with Jeremy for IPC. Kevin Lee, there you go. As soon as I stop thinking about it, Kevin, I apologise absolutely, unreservedly. As I started that sentence, I had all three names in my head. And then as soon as I was going to try and put Kevin second, and as soon as I didn't and put AJ Allmendinger second, then it completely messed up my thinking, my straight line thinking. So, Kevin, I do apologise. Kevin Lee, AJ Allmendinger and Calvin Fish up in Charlotte calling the race at Sebring for NBC Sports today, if you're in the US.
Barbosa just had another sketchy moment, though, coming through turn three and walked up the brakes once again and had to run wide. Now, there was some sort of an issue last night when he missed his braking point and had a full lockup going into turn seven, so it might be something on the car rather than something that just happened to happen, if you know what I mean, from last night. I'll have to send him a message once he actually gets out of the car, because wow, is somebody who's really good at getting back to me.
So, yeah, so you did you find out what happened to him last night, Shay?
No, I didn't last night because they were working on things once he got back to the pit lane, but I will send him a message that he'll see as soon as he jumps out.
So 50 minutes to go, and let's give you a rundown of what's happening from the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Philippe Nasse for the 31 Whelan Engineering Cadillac leading out by just on 0.2 of a second from Renger van der Zander. Harry Tinknell third for the Mazdas. Mazdas a little bit closer. They'll be a bit happier today, Jeremy, in these conditions.
Yeah, last night they weren't trying to push the envelope. They were just sort of going through the motions they were just gathering data for the race. They weren't too concerned about pace. They were just looking at the bigger picture. So I don't think we saw the Mazdas show their full capabilities last night, but I would imagine we will do as this session progresses, and from what I gather, no dramas whatsoever there in the Mazda camp.
Behind that car is Tristan Vautier for the number 85. That is the JDC Miller Motorsport car, and that is their car, as Ollie Jarvis improves to second position at NASA's time, 147.5. That's not hanging around, Jeremy, in that wheel and engineer number 31.
No, 147.5 is not hanging around. You're absolutely right. Just a tenth of a second slower than Harry Tickle's lap record set last season. 147.472 that was for Harry, an average speed of 125 miles an hour. And Felipe Nasr just ticked behind that right away this morning. Just five laps completed by him. There's another off there for John Ferrano, it looks like, in the Tower Motorsports by Starworks. Kind of eight in LMP2.
Simplest.
Yeah, but...
Well, on the other side of the track this time. Well, I don't know. He's in the same place now. Yeah, maybe it is. He had a little bit of help, though.
Oh, did he?
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Oh, yes, he did. A very slidey number 911. I did see that Nicholas Tandy did like to go down the inside of a P2 car, and he was trying a little bit hard there in a free practice session. There's a wee bit of damage on the side of the Starworks at number 8, and that will not please Peter Barron at all. They will need to do a little bit of remedial work there. Just behind the front wheel, a bit of bodywork is hanging loose there, and I think the rear deck is at a little jaunty angle. Might just pop one of the clips there as well. Left side. Oh, in fairness, the number plate illumination and the number panel showing fourth position for that car in its LMP2 class, that's the blue class as far as the numbers on the side. Well, that's still working as well, but there's a little bit of Michelin rubber on there. Shit, news about the number plates.
There was actually an IMSA competition bulletin that was sent out a few weeks ago regarding the number panel running for Sebring. Now, this race is not going to partake in the night necessarily. It's scheduled to finish at 8:15, which is the sun setting, but not dark. But the number panels must be illuminated on all the cars in the field as if it were a night race. So that was something a little bit interesting to see come out from the powers that be at IMSA.
John Ferrano struggling back and almost gets caught up with the number 7 as well. In fact, I think there's a side-by-side brush with that car going into the hairpin. It's the Acura. I think we were talking about how good those early sessions are, Jeremy, to get confidence for the bronze and silver drivers, but after a little drop off the road and then a helped ushering off the road and a bit of a bang for John Ferrano, he might just be taking time to get his breath back.
I think that might be an outlap actually, because his last lap time was shown as 5.5 minutes, so I'm presuming that he was on his outlap when both of those incidents occurred.
Possibly.
So that was a fairly major wake up call, and now he's brought that car back to pit lane, and he'll take a bit of a breather, I think, for a few moments. Interesting to see now in GTD, Gar Robinson up into second position in the number 74 Riley Motorsports Mercedes, 2 minutes 2.824. That's just less than 3 tenths of a second off the best time set so far by Aaron Seelitz. It showed us Gar Robinson, the winner of that car, because he shares it with Lawson Aschenbach. But Gar, has got a lot of experience around here in Trans Am cars and other machines as well. So good job there by Gar Robinson. Mark Miller in the Gradient Racing Acura NSX GT3 up to third position now in GTD. Good to see that team back again. They'll be here for the full IMSA WeatherTech Sprint Cup Championship for GTD. And that's, of course, the only Acuras that will be here this weekend, because the regular pair of Meyer Shank Racing Acuras are competing only in the full season championship, not the GTD Sprint Cup. So it's Gradient Racing that is flying the flag solo in GTD this weekend for Acura.
It's also important to remember that 74, the Riley Technology Mercedes, was the car that won the Encore in November with Gar and Lawson behind the wheel. So they do have a little bit of experience racing around Sebring in more difficult conditions. Gar had to drive more than 2.5 hours of that 4-hour race, too. So he did get a lot of track time out there. Gar, as you mentioned, Jeremy, a guy who's very comfortable with this track, having driven it many, many times. I'm expecting them to be a dark horse contender today, that number 74 Mercedes.
Yeah, and I was very impressed with Gar Robinson, how he's been attacking and I use that word advisedly, attacking his driving. But he's got a good tutor in that car with him, Jeremy, hasn't he?
Yeah, very much so. Lawson Aschenbach is a really good guy in and out of the car. He can pedal, no question about it. He's been multiple champion in various different sports car categories, so hugely experienced these days, and like I say, a really, really nice guy as well. So a great guy to have as your wingman in this sort of car. But you know, Gar himself, as you know, his father George was a long-time IMSA competitor. He had many, many miles around this racetrack back in the day, and Gar is proving himself to be no mean peddler as well.
It's Jeremy Shaw and Shea Adam. I'm John Heindorf. It's RS2, IMSA Radio, exclusive coverage live of this FP2, the final of the free practice sessions. We go into qualifying, which we'll have for you in sound and vision later on. And wherever you are in the world, you can tune into that. No breaks and no blocks for the qualifying. Always the same for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Coming into the last half an hour before we throw it over to the GT, Le Mans and the Ditto, the Prototypes, effectively the two pro classes, if you will. So still plenty of time in this middle 45-minute all-skate session, as Jeremy described it earlier on. Let's take some time in GTD. In Vassar Sullivan picking up where they left off at Daytona. Aaron Thielen tunes out very early in the 14 with a 2:02.544. Aschenbach for Riley in second, so 14 then 74. Lexus, Mercedes, Till Bechtelsheimer for Acura and for Gradient Racing in third. Both Aschenbach and Bechtelsheimer out on the track. Montecalvo's in the pit for the second of the Lexus. In GT Le Mans, two Porsches, 912 from 911, Bamba from Tandy, separated by almost 3/10 of a second. Oh, he's just jumped up there. Bamba's improved and got up to 13th overall, so put a little bit of more time, just over half a second now between himself and his teammate. Behind Tandy, it's the two Corvettes in team order, 3 from 4, Jordan Taylor and Tom Milner, separated by 0.004 of a second. I remember down through the years always never seeing that Corvette can't turn out two identically quick cars, because wherever they are in the timing screens, they're never separated by very many numbers on the timing screen, and it's 0.004 here. Then the two BMWs, another 3/10 further back for Bruno Spengler, for Rahal Letterman Lanigan in the M8 GTE. His teammate a little bit further back, that's Jesse Krohn, 1.2 seconds off. In P2, Cameron Castles now behind the wheel of the mighty 38 Performance Tech, 9th overall. So they are not doing too bad at all. So that has just usurped the Patrick Kelly time in the PR1 Matheson Motorsports 52 by half a tenth. So literally the blink of an eye there. And then it's a couple of seconds back to Henry Edmund for Dragon Speed, who's out of the 81. Starworks' John Ferrano has just gone back out, and he's only half a second away from Henrik's time. And at the top, still Nasser with that 1:47.579. Three purple sectors means that no one is quicker than him at any part of the Sebring International Circuit. He's just gone back out again. Ricky Taylor is out for Team Penske in second, but nearly half a second away. And third, another 7/10 further back, the 77 of Holly Jarvis. That puts 1.1 seconds, Jeremy Shaw, across the top three, which is just showing how hard the guys are trying in the front. I just wonder if Whelan maybe did an early qualifying sim with Felipe Nasser when other people perhaps weren't doing their qualifying sims quite as early on in the session.
Yeah, maybe not a qualifying sim per se, but I'm sure I would think it's probably a bit early to be doing that, because it's going to be quite a bit more rubber laid down before we get ready for qualifying. I think we'll see 3 hours down the road to another prototype challenge races before qualifying, to in between the session and the qualifying session. But certainly, I'm sure it was it certainly wasn't a full tank run, that's for sure. And getting a good feel for the car there. So Felipe Nasser, really excellent run for him. Was he out in the car last night? Did he drive it last night? Yeah, he did some laps last night, didn't he? But I think he was out probably only in the damper conditions. So this, I think, was his first run to get out, you know, to get there in full drive. In GTD, still the time set by Aaron Tielitz, which is at the top of the charts. 2 minutes, 2.544 for car number 14. Lawson Aschenbach has now taken over from Gar Robinson. In the second place, Mercedes, car number 74, 202.8. Also, the 202.8 was Mark Miller in the Gradient Racing Acura, which is now taken over by Till Bechtelsheimer. Townsend Bell is currently at the wheel of the fourth place Lexus, car number 14. The time of 202.9 was set by Frankie Montecalvo. Also, the 202.9 is Robbie Foley, number 96, Turner Motorsport BMW, who's actually in the pits right now. And then in the sixth position in the class, Ryan Hardwick in the Porsche for Wright Motorsports at 203.6, just fractionally more than a second away from the fastest time. So a good run there for Ryan Hardwick.
We've got a penalty coming down the line too, Jeremy. The 81, the Dragon Speed LMP2 car. They're the crew that won Daytona with a different driver lineup here at Sebring this weekend, keep in mind. But the number 81 sent out Gustavo Menezes behind the wheel during the bronze and silver only session. Why is that an issue? Well, he's a gold. So that has resulted in that car eliciting a stop plus 60 second penalty. Oopsies. That's not reading the rule book very clearly.
Down to the last 37 minutes. Great to hear throbbing engine notes from Sebring down through the gearbox to the hairpin in front of the hotel. The 77 Mazda with the smallest engine. It's more of a screamer than a throbber, to be honest. The little four-cylinder inline turbocharged engine. But we have seen proved many, many times, Jeremy Shaw, that a good little un can be just as good as a good big un.
Isn't that right? And yeah, the basis of this engine has been around a long, long time now, but it's certainly proven, and the AER have done a super job with getting, dare I say it, the consistency in that engine now. And you know, they had a great run at Daytona, finished in second position after getting the pole. A tremendous win last time out at Daytona in the return to racing, and so there's no question that the Mazda is going in now to the season as one of the championship favourites.
Through the final corner, turn number 14, turn number 17 by the sunset for number 14, Jack Hawksmith, who's top of the shop for the Lexus RCF GT3, steers across to driver's right. Couldn't have done that yesterday. Big puddles all the way along there. What an amazing turnaround, and what great hard work, by the way, by Track Services at Sebring International Raceway. Shout out for all of those workers who were on it the moment that they could be back out on track with the sweepers, the blowers, the brooms, everything that they could do. And also, of course, to our track safety workers, whether that's the recovery, flag marshals, or any other track workers. Brilliant work in very, very difficult conditions yesterday weather-wise. That meant we did get that full session, that one-hour session yesterday evening. And my goodness, didn't everybody need that session? They really wanted to get back out on the track. I thought at one stage when we'd gone so late that one or two of them might have thought, yeah, come on, let's go for an early dinner. There was none of that at all. They were out like the clappers, wanted to be out there on the track.
Indeed, so yes, you're absolutely right there. They were, and you know, they did work hard to get this session. We were wondering whether it might be cancelled, but no. IMSA was absolutely adamant they were going to get it in. They were pretty sure the weather was going to clear up kind of late, a little bit later in the evening than it was originally anticipated. That did turn out to be the case, and it ended up being a very productive 1 hour long session for pretty much all the team. So, yeah, hats off to everybody there for making sure that happened. We saw a glance of John Ferrano serving that penalty. The number 81 car,
yeah,
serving the penalty in pit lane, and we've got a new fastest time.
It's
in
Gustavo Menezes, I think, that was in that car. Richard, the IMSA official with the stopwatch, was just counting him down. Meantime, at the head of LMP2,
Yeah, it's a new time by supposedly John Ferrano, but John, I'd be massively impressed if you set that time, because more likely I would suggest is that the driver plug didn't get changed over, that Ryan Dyell is now driving that number 8 Tower Motorsport what by Starworks entry, and if not, my apologies, but certainly it's a very, very good lap time. 152.089 on the new benchmark in LMP2, compared to 147.5 for the overall DPI time for Felipe Nasr. Second fastest in LMP2 is Kyle Masson at 152.5 in the Performance Tech Motorsports entry, calibre 38. Cameron Castles is driving that car now.
A new second place in GT Le Mans. The Corvette has split the two Porsches, and it's Jordan Taylor's Corvette, the number 3, that he shares to some great effect. And that car has been very competitive. Antonio Garcia, haven't seen his name on the timing screen alongside that car in this session. They were the guys who got the 100th IMSA victory for Corvette Racing. And between those two, about a tenth and a half, if that, at the moment. So Corvette are the meat in the Porsche bread, if you will. They are splitting up the two Porsche GT team cars. Sadly, those not making the trip to Le Mans, although some of the drivers will do. 60 cars for Le Mans announced yesterday, with travel restrictions still imposed and somewhat, at the moment, too many unknowns, I fear, for people travelling to France from the USA. Five further withdrawals from the original entry list, although there's been 3 replacements found from the reserve list. But we will, at the moment, start a maximum of 60 cars at Le Mans in September, and no further additions to be made, by the way, to that Le Mans. It'll be a very different Le Mans this year, and however it goes ahead, whether there are spectators or not, and that's far from sure yet, if it happens, we'll have every session for you over on RS1 as part of the Radio Show Limited commitment to endurance sports car racing. There are still some American interest over there, including, I did notice here that Ricci Competition was still on the list that came out yesterday, so they're going to try their very hardest to get out at Le Mans.
Yeah, this is their race for sure. They normally run the NAEC, or the Michelin Endurance Championship as it is. Now, they do run Daytona, Sebring, and Petit Le Mans normally without fail, but they have focused on the 24 Hours of Le Mans for the last couple of years, and this year it has been announced an all-French driver lineup, so they're trying everything they can to get a win over there in France.
Yeah, absolutely so. And there will be some IMSA and US interest. Yourself onto the ACO site if you haven't seen that list. Not all of the drivers declared for that yet, but it's in September this year. Only once before has it happened in September. That was in 1968, when there was a little bit of civil unrest in France and it was cancelled in its usual June date. It has run July once as well, early on. I think that was in the 1930s, from memory. And then there was a break for the Second World War, of course, coming up with the 100th anniversary in a couple of years' time, the anniversary of the first running, 1923, of that great race. Still a bit of racing to go on over here before we start turn our minds to Central France. Shea, go ahead.
I do like that little bit of symmetry there, John, that we're talking about a race that had to take a break because of World War II, and we are at a racetrack that exists because of World War II.
Yeah, true enough. See if there's anybody improving at the moment. Not a lot of... Harry Tinknell's just put in his best middle sector. Needs to improve just a little bit, and does so. Goes up to third. So now we've got Cadillac Acura. Mazda Cadillac, Cadillac Acura, Cadillac in the top 8 for DPI. And now, Jeremy, only separated that whole top 8 for DPI by 1.2 seconds. That's more what we expected to see.
Yeah, certainly right. Absolutely right there. I'm sure there's more to come, but that was certainly a great lap set early on by Felipe Nasr in that number 31 car. That car is in the pits at the moment. In fact, the only two prototypes out on track, of the DPIs at least, are the number 55 Mazda, which is just heading into the hairpin, and also Elio Castroneves in the number 7 Acura, that's currently in second position. Everybody else in the pits for adjustments at the moment, with 28 minutes remaining in this session.
And that means just under 15 minutes left for the GT Daytonas. Remember, they don't take part in the last 15 of the session because of this sort of rolling split. There's no checkered flag where everybody has to come off the track. If you remember, the GTDs, and specifically just their bronze and silver drivers, were allowed out on their own to start with, and the LMP2s, in fairness as well, that's seen as a pro-am class as well. Thank you, Shay. Saw some very good times there from those drivers. Right, let's see if there's going to be another improvement by Harry in the number 55, coming down towards the final right-handed corner. Very bumpy on turning, then the car settles down, then under the bridge there's another set of bumps, and then just as you exit there's another set of bumps, and he comes in for a quick entry to the pit lane. Gets on the brakes really, really late. Make sure he's down at the pit lane speed limit before the speed limit sign. It's just relentless, the battering you get, particularly around turn 17, sunset here, Jeremy. Just when you think you've got the car settled down after initial turning, there's a bump. Oh, okay, I've caught it. Oh, no, there's another bump. And you're on your way out. You're just about to get on the throttle. And goodness me, there's another bump.
Yeah, it's a workout around that. I mean, you see sort of slow motion videos of the car. They seem to spend more time in the air than with the rubber touching the ground. And the front straight too, it's really rough down there, turn one ditto. I mean, this is a real workout physically for the cars and the drivers.
It's no surprise that so many teams choose to test here, Jeremy, to be honest. And back in the days when we had Peugeot and Audi and others, well, just extraordinary how many times they'd be down here during what we would call the winter months over in Europe to get some fair weather, mild weather testing in. And it was always said that 12 hours around here was worth 24 any other racetrack. And when you see, I think particularly when you're trackside, on the television you see it, and the super slow-mos, Jeremy, really show it up. But when you're trackside and you see just how violent it is and how the cars are changing direction and moving around, that's when you really realise just how tough this place is.
Yeah, that's true. I think you're absolutely right there. And you know, it is a track that all the drivers absolutely, they love the challenge of it. I mean, some drivers will say, "Oh, yeah, it's way too bumpy. It's really, it's just too hard. You can't really get the car to its ultimate capabilities because it's leaping around on the bumps so much." But the vast majority of drivers say they will take over that, just a challenge of the place, because there's such a great variety of corners around here, and you know, it takes its total commitment around this racetrack. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
No.
So that challenge is what all of these drivers relish.
Salt the drivers from the drivers, as you you might say. I heard somebody say that a few years ago, and I thought that was a reasonable way to put it. And you know, we have Super Sebring. Oh, we have had Super Sebring with the WEC cars, and the people who haven't been here before shake their heads but go away with tales of derring do, and surely that's what it's all about. And I do think that what we have here is a really lovely balance between history and modern. It's been changed down through the years. One or two places that happened particularly was extended quite a few years ago now. Turn 17, pushed back on the left hand side as you come through there. There's a little bit more runoff, a few more nods to safety. Of course, that makes perfect sense. But as I said in the opening, a huge amount, the vast majority of what the guys are driving on, and certainly the concrete areas, are as they were when you see the old photographs and the old film, of people driving around when it was oil drums and hay bales that was delineating the circuit. I mean, it's extraordinary, the history of this place.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, the area around where we're on board now with Carnival 10 as he heads up through Tower Turn, there, Turn 12, and that section kind of before that, between the hairpin and there, is sort of around the runway, the buildings of Sebring Airport, and the runoff area there is used to be even less than it is now. The barriers, sand barriers effectively, right next to the racetrack, earth mounds, there was very little runoff at all. So the rest of the track is, much of it is wide open, but you know, it's still retained its character, I think, even after all these years.
Oh,
it's certainly been, it used to be well over 4.5 miles in length, but it's still every bit of a challenge as it ever was.
Shea Adam, Bill, your dad, raced here a few years ago for the first time, has had some cracking results here, and that was in the days when it was still hay bales, and that's what, in the late 70s, early 80s?
It was 1980 was his first trip, and actually his first time to Sebring was his first time to any other racetrack besides one in Canada with hills and whatnot, and there were hay bales denoting the edge of the track, so the first time he left the pits in his triumph, he got lost and came back in after doing about a 6-minute lap, and the crew guys were laughing at him because they knew exactly what happened. It was frequent back then when the edge of the track wasn't clearly marked as it is today. It was just sort of recommendation points as to where to turn in.
So effectively he went the wrong side of one of the hay bales and then couldn't find the track from there. Had to wait until somebody went by him that he could use as a bit of a sighter.
I mean, he was still driving on concrete. He was still driving around on the premise.
I've seen the pictures. It's great.
He just didn't know where the rest of the track was. But no, he made up for it winning that year with Bob Julius. So it was all good.
I was going to say, so what would that have been, the TR6 then? One of the Group 44 TR6s?
It was a TR6 or a TR8. But yes, one of those two.
Okay. Oh, very good. Very good. Got to get Nick Damon talking about that. He's got a TR4A IRS, so a little bit earlier than that. Very nice Wedgwood Blue classic for Mr. Damon that he's been spending some time on currently. New best time for Gustavo Menezes, and that is the new best time in LMP2 as well, Jeremy. Under 150 by getting on for 0.3 seconds.
Yeah, and he's just got quicker again now, 49.695 there for Gustavo Menezes as he's just completed his 20th lap. Ryan Diehl in second place at 150.5. He's also on a good run now. That's just showing what the car can do. These guys will not qualify their cars, of course. It will be the bronze-rated drivers that have to qualify in LMP2, but these guys, out the pros out there now, just showing what the cars can do. Are capable of there for Ryan, 150.5, and up at the top, sharp end of the field, it's still Pipo Duran. It leads away with that 147.5 that was set very early on in this session after just 5 laps. Dane Cameron now, though, up into second position, 147.9 in a number 6 Acura.
Just 5 minutes left now for those who don't get the last 15, if that makes sense. We'll see those pull off in 2 or 3 laps' time. There are sanctions to be applied if you stay out there, and that normally means you get a stop and hold at the start of qualifying, which is not what you need. That is the next session, of course, for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship here at the Cadillac Grand Prix of Sebring. So we get very serious indeed as we're setting grid positions in a race, of course, that is not the usual 12 hours that we'd be talking about around here. And in some ways, Jeremy, I think that probably makes qualifying even more important. I would think slightly fewer differences between a qualifying setup and a race setup, because all they're going to do is effectively, certainly for the GT cars, it'll be 3 stints, 2 pit stops, possibly. Because of the fast nature around here, it might be through at 3 and a bit stints, so 2 and a splash for the prototypes.
Yeah, the prototypes will be
3 full stops, do you think?
Well, at least, yeah.
Right.
How many minutes is the race?
2:40.
No, it'll be four at least, man.
Right, yes. Yeah. They do about 40 minutes. Yes, sorry. Five, absolutely right.
Yeah, five stops. And it's there's certainly plenty of time for strategists to play that for this. I've got my race coming on yet. Plenty of. I think qualifying is fairly important because it's knowledge to our values. There isn't as much time to make up. So I think all the teams are going to try and run a competition.
Just losing Jeremy there for a moment. We'll give him and the connection to him a chance to catch its breath. All of the categories, I'm very pleased to see, are now in order. So we have 8 DPIs, 5 P2s, 6 GTLMs, and then the balance of the field is the 10 GTDs. I think Riley's chewed through the cable so that Jeremy can take him for a walk. How is the coolest dog in motorsport, by the way, Jeremy?
He's great, thank you. He's chased away those intruders. Excellent. that were around earlier on. So it's now clear sailing now, and he's chomping the bit, ready to go for a W, I think.
Okay. Don't mention the W word when the dog's around. Absolutely not. All right, couple of minutes left for the GT Daytonas and the LMP2s, and then we'll get the last 15 minutes for the two. What are termed pro classes. Lawrence Vanter has just gone out, having taken over the car from Earl Bamber. This is the 912. Now, we've seen in past seasons a division of labour between Vanter and Bamber, which works particularly well in the shorter races, actually. Lawrence Vanter will be now setting the car up for qualifying. He'll qualify the car and do the first stint only in the race later on. I nearly said it in the race tomorrow. In the work that was being done beforehand by Earl Bamber, the Kiwi, the New Zealander, will have been getting the balance of the car to do a double stint on tyres for stints 2 and 3. That's how they've divided the work over the last couple of seasons, and my goodness, it's worked very well for them. Tony Wielander goes to the top, I think for the first time in this session, for Scuderia Corsa and the WeatherTech Ferrari. That's the 488 GT3, the number 63 car, and that new fastest time in GTD is a 2:02.3, so a couple of tenths quicker than Lawson Aschenbach for Ian Vassar-Sullivan. Riley Motors, Jack Hawksworth for Ian Vassar-Sullivan, combining two drivers and two cars there. That could get hot, sweaty and a little uncomfortable if they were both in the seat at the same time. Lawson Aschenbach is, of course, in the Riley Motorsports GT3. So it's Ferrari, Lexus, Mercedes and Acura at the top four. Great to see the variety, as the 81 going slowly at the moment. Gustavo Menezes, is that?
Yes.
He's just done a very, very quick time. 1:49.7, and in fact that was coasting, so he was on for an even faster time than his 1:49.6. I think he might have run that out of fuel, Jeremy.
I won't disagree with you. He certainly seems to be dead stick there. He's opening the door and
it's down the back.
He's going to be vacating the premises.
He's managed to get it into the pit lane exit of the challenge pits, that, as we're calling them this weekend, being used for the Michelin Pilot Challenge and will be used today for the IMSA Prototype Challenge. Session almost over for the LMP2s anyway. In fact, now it is over as we're inside the last 15 minutes which is for DPIs and GTLMs only. But good driving and good thinking by Gustavo. What a find he's been, and really adapted to the rigours and the requirements of sports car racing, Jeremy, very well indeed, has Mr. Menezes.
Very much so, yeah. He's been super fast in this car. He's got the fastest time by a full half a second over Ryan Diehl. He's got a lot of experience in these cars. So Gustavo, you know, this is a track he knows well. Gustavo, he's raced here, of course, in the WC last year. and is excited to be driving this Dragon Speed car this weekend.
WEC champion in LMP2 and has set the timing screens alight whenever he's got into those cars. Single seat to background, and as I say, translated very well indeed to prototype racing. So that's it for GT Daytona and LMP2. So we can congratulate the late arrival at the top of the timing screens for Scuderia Corsa and Tony Wielander with that 2:02.3. Just on, let's call it 2/10 ahead of Jack Hawksworth for Ian Vassett Sullivan. Then Riley Motorsports, that was a Lawson Aschenbach time. Spencer Pumpelly has just brought the Audi up into fourth position on his last lap.
Time.
Again?
Actually, it was the Gar Robinson time, according to the scoring.
Yep. Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, okay. Excellent.
Did a mock qualifying run there, John.
Ah, because he will have to qualify that car. Yes, indeed.
Correct.
Good point. Spencer Pumpelly has just pulled Team Hardpoint and their Audi up into fourth position with a 2:02.8 on the last lap before the checker came out for them. Then it's Till Bechtelsheimer and Mark Miller for Gradient Racing in the Soul Acura, as Jeremy was mentioning, because of this only being the Sprint Cup run. Then T. Bell, Townsend Bell, Ian Vassett Sullivan in the second of the Lexus. And, I mean, it's tight, super tight after that Gar Robinson time. Here's the gaps below that Riley in third position. 0.008, 0.026, 0.045, 0.060, 0.026. So you're talking about 0.2 of a second, if that, between second position and seventh position. I mean, that's just ridiculously tight, Jeremy. And exactly what we expect in GT Daytona.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 0.4 from second down to down to eighth position is tight. And yeah, all the only car that's not within a second of the fastest time just set by Tony Wielander is, surprisingly, Andy Lally in the GRT Magnus Racing Lamborghini. And that is the only Lamborghini that's best time.
And a VP Racing Fuels update from Shane.
I've just talked with Tower Motorsport driver Ryan Dial, who did confirm that it was him driving for that fast time, by the way, Jeremy, so you were right. They've got some floor damage on the left side as well as a brake duct, but it's not as terrible as it could have been. They're going to do some work in between, get the car fixed up, and then send John Pagano out for the qualifying session later. But Ryan still thinks they have a good race car for the race later today.
Shane Adam, our VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock reporter, and again very many thanks to all the teams and drivers for making sure we can still get the information when we're not allowed into the paddock. In fairness, Shane, quite a lot of the PRs aren't in the paddock either. They're doing remote working as well.
Correct. Most of the people that I've been in contact with, I think actually all of the team PRs that I've been in contact with, are doing their jobs remotely too. So everybody's staying safe and staying properly socially distanced of at least 500 miles.
Yeah, I was going to say sometimes by several hundred or thousand miles rather than 6 feet or 6 foot six, 2 meters. And just underlying, I suppose, the great community and family feel of the IMSA paddocks for all of the championships. We think of ourselves as a community radio station, I suppose, sometimes. It's just our community isn't necessarily, and particularly not in these times, it's not just geographic. It is about an interest. We are global, but we serve a community, and the community is endurance and sports car racing, and including people who are working, quote-unquote, in the paddock, or virtually in the paddock this weekend. Stay safe, everybody. Do what needs to be done. Last 10 minutes then, and bit of a run for Renger van der Zander, and he's gone quickest of that car in the long middle sector at 1:08.091. You see, he's heading down the back straight now in that glossy black Konica Minolta sponsored machine. A little bit of vibration from the rear wing just over the bumps, turns into the final corner. Wait, got to be so patient before you get back on the throttle. The big Cadillac V8 roars back to life and goes to the line. It's a decent lap from van der Zander. It's his and the car's best lap. That's a 1:48.217. Good enough for third position. Tristan Nunez also improving to a 148.3. That's fifth position for that car. Castro Neves starting to pick up pace in currently the third place. So at the moment, it's Cadillac Acura, and Lawrence Vanto has found a good setup for qualifying for the 912. Just gone quicker again in that car. It was already the quickest in its race trim setup, and now he brings that down to a 56.8, and he's got half a second on the rest of the field. Jeremy Shaw, Corvette, going to have to pick up the pace a little bit as Fred Makovecki is still in third, and Ollie Gavin out in the number four. That's the grey and yellow car now in fourth position.
Yeah, Jordan Taylor set the fastest time in the Corvette at a 157.3. That was a little while ago. That car is already in, or is in the pits right now. But certainly he was quickest at the time until Vanthor got back ahead again. Back ahead of him again there. So, you know, I think once again it's pretty tight in GTLM. Super BMWs, I think, not yet showing their ultimate capability. 158.3 for the number 24 car. That was Jesse Krohn. Colin DeFilippi, a 1 minute 58.5 number 25 car. So they're 1.4, 1.7 seconds off the ultimate pace. But I would suggest for this stage, just for some reason, they have not yet done a qualifying sim. And, you know, it's often the case, isn't it, that we see in GTLM, we see it every race weekend. We don't really see what these cars are capable of until it is proper qualifying, not sim qualifying, forget all that, until qualifying itself, then we will see what these cars are capable of.
And the BMWs do seem to race better than they qualify anyway. I just wonder if they're not making maybe as many changes, or indeed maybe there's some engineering reason why they can't make as many changes to squeeze out a half a second or a second in qualifying trim, such as it is nowadays. And that's something that Porsche have always been able to do, particularly with Lawrence Vanthoor, who concentrates on that setup. Elio Fastro Neves at the moment, because he's gone to the top with a 147.3. That gives him a 0.2 advantage on Pipo Durrani, who's back out in the 31. Montoya in the pits in third, now 0.6 away from the top time. Make that a second away from the top time as Durrani fights back for Whelan. I'm not having you knock me off the track, Elio, no matter how much you smile at me. It's the 31 back on top with a 146.940. This qualifying session coming up later on, Jeremy, is going to be an absolute cracker.
It's going to be fun, isn't it? Yeah, and that is faster than the race lap record set last year by Harry Tuchman. That was 147.4. So a really good lap then for Pipo Durrani. Both he and Elio Castroneves are quicker than the race lap record here. The qualifying lap record, 145.8. So that's not under threat yet. That was from Dane Cameron last year. But yeah, I think we're certainly going to see faster times in these when we get into qualifying one in about 3 hours' time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely right. So time enough to go and have a debrief, spot a food if you can. That's what you do. Some of the drivers don't like to before their qualifying race. Certainly get the hydration up because it's going to be warm. Track temperature has gone up a wee bit. 31 Celsius for the track. 29 still in the air. It was 29 and 29 at the start of this session. Humidity has dropped back from 85% to 79%. Now clicks over to 80 as I speak that. As I speak. Just, Backspace, take that out. Okay. Here comes Durrani again, looking smooth into turn number 17. Maybe peeling off into the pits here. Looks like he's on a tighter line. No, he stays out. My goodness me, took a lot of speed through the final corner. Heads for the line there. 146.9 is best, 147.8. Castro Neves with a 147.3, half a second away. Then Montoya, still on his outlap at the moment. He's got a 47.9 to his name. Then it's 48 beyond that. 48 flat for Nunez, the fastest of the Mazdas. Van der Zander between the Mazdas, along with Stephen Simpson. 77, 55 car still in the pit.
Stephen Simpson making a welcome return to the number 85 car this weekend alongside Tristan Vergier. Chris Miller was concentrating this weekend on the Michelin Pilot Challenge, driving one of the LAP Motorsports Hondas. Didn't have much luck, but good to see Stephen Simpson certainly back at the wheel of a DPI car. Castro Neves, by the way, he did one slow lap there. We'll see what he can do now. He's on another quick lap at the moment. In the meantime, Sebastian Bourdais has jumped from last, eighth in DPI, to second overall.
Wow.
With a best lap there of 147.212 for the Frenchman. So Durrani 146.940, Bourdais 147.212, Castro Neves 47.348. Those three are half a second or more clear of the second of the Acuras, but Bourdais is still out there. I think he's going to go for another lap, and I think Pipo Durrani was on a pretty good lap. So is Elio Castro Neves. He's just gone green in that middle sector.
Yeah, that is the long sector. That's about 67 seconds in there. Durrani's still the only driver with a sub 1 minute 47. He is in a class of one, or a club of one at least, at the moment. One thing I would mention is just how durable these Michelin tyres are. We'll see it again in qualifying, Jeremy. They'll be on a light fuel load, of course, for that 15-minute session. But not unusual for those perhaps... not used to this qualifying, 15-minute qualifying. Not unusual to see drivers and teams out for pretty much the whole 15 minutes. They can't touch the car, they can't make any adjustments, and they certainly can't change tyres. And we have seen last laps being the fastest laps and settling pole position.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting qualifying run. Elio Castro Neves did complete that last lap, by the way. 147.7 was that last lap, so not quite as quick as his previous lap. He lost a bit of time, particularly in the final sector, compared to his earlier run. But certainly, Elio Castro Neves, who was on the pole last time out at Daytona, both of the Acuras really struggled in the race, particularly to try and get the fuel consumption necessary to do it on the minimum number of stops. But we'll see how they compare in the race, and it's now Cadillac, Acura, and then the two Mazdas are split by the pair of Cadillacs, number 10 and number 85 car, both of which are Nunez, number 77, number 10 and number 85 are in the pit. So as I say, that Renger van der Zende is now on an outlap in car number 10 with just a minute and a half remaining in this session. So he might have enough time to complete this outlap and go for one flying lap, perhaps.
Yeah, Jonathan Bomarito, I think, is doing that right now in the dark salt red crystal coloured car, heading round the far side of the circuit, that serpentine run towards the airfield airfield side of the track that Jeremy was describing before. He's just gone through turn 12, now into the Jean de Bien S's. Le Mans winner in 1962 with Phil Hill, Jean de Bien, of course, and now into the Le Mans corner, which takes him on to the back straight. He's got a decent run going on here, and he will get one more after this, so he will get to go onto a final lap. There's about 40 seconds on the clock as he comes through turn number 17.
By Sebastian Bourdais, yes. I think that is behind him. So he's on a good lap also, I believe.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So Bomarito does improve, 48.4. Does Bourdais turn?
Bourdais did a 47.5.
Right.
So 3/10 away from his best. Montoya has just done his best, a 47.6, but it doesn't move him from fourth position. Still 3/10 of a second exactly behind Elio Castro Neves, his team Penske Acura. Team Penske, I should more properly say. J-Bomb has got an absolute clear track ahead of him. Under the Mobil 1 warp over bridge, down towards the hairpin in front of the hotel, turns in right-handed, takes the curb on the right-hand side. Now, accelerates out and up through the gears, balance the car for the quick right-hander, then the sweeping left, which isn't a left in terms of a corner. You just keep your foot on, pick your braking point, down through the gearbox, take a bit of curb on the right-hand side. Have to be slightly patient there to get the car balanced before you go back on the throttle. Already heading towards that turn 12 area we were talking about earlier on. Take the inside curb and then run onto the blue and white outside curbs. And now take a deep breath, put your straps down, completely flat through the first two right-handers. down a couple of gears into the right-handed part of the Jean de Bian benching and run the curb, and then you actually go off the track to try and open out turn 16 onto the back straight. Curbs have been widened there through the last few years, and still there's a big groove that's been ground on the far side of them, the left-hand side of them, where people run over and dig up the clear-coloured earth. Now into turn 17, don't have to get that first apex spot on, you just nudge the car into it. It's all about how early you can get on the power on the way out, and Bomarito's done a decent job here. He'll get the jacket flag. He goes through, does not improve, but he did do his best, and that car's best final sector. I didn't think it was tidy there, but not enough to improve. So I think it's going to be Pipo Durrani. It is going to be Pipo Durrani, the only man in the 146 club, 146.940, who takes the top time. And interestingly, did he not have a fastest sector at all there? That's very interesting if that's the case. Castro Neves has 2, 1 and 3.
I think the other one was Bourdais.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
So changes though in GTLM right at the end there, John. Fred McAvecky jumped to the top of the charts in number 911 Porsche, 156.754. So that edges his teammate Laurens Vanthoor by 0.087 of a second. Next up, two Corvettes. First of them, a couple of tenths down. That's Oliver Gavin, who turned at 157.0. Jordan Taylor's best of a 157.3. Actually, out at the end in that session was Antonio Garcia, yeah, but it's Jordan right Taylor set the time earlier on. An improvement towards the end there for Jesse Krohn and for Bruno Spengler. Jesse Krohn at 157.7. Bruno Spengler 157.9, so 1.1 seconds covering the six cars in GTLM,
and only the two Porsches in the 56s. So again, they've got a decent advantage there. It's all right doing it now, Jeremy, but you've got to do it in qualifying as well. And sure, you noticed a couple of improvements on the last couple of tours for the BMW, so they did get a little bit more of a wiggle on for Jesse Krohn and Bruno Spengler.
Yeah, thankfully I was starting to get a little bit worried about them, but now both BMWs, the 24 ahead of the 25, so in numerical order, thank you for that, guys. Jesse Krohn put in a time that was just 9 tenths off the fastest lap. That was McAvecky right at the end. And Bruno Spengler is 1.1 seconds off the best time. So the 24 and the 25, they got closer than they were before because it was about 1.7 seconds off the pace. So they are closer, but they're still not where I'd like to see them.
Earlier on, as far as LMP2 is concerned, it was Dragon Speed and Gustavo Menezes with a 49.6. A good, 8 tenths, 7 tenths of a second, 6 tenths of a second away from anybody else. Ryan DL and Starworks in second, and PR1 Matheson Motorsport in third. Spencer Piggott doing some laps at the end of the session for the 52 PR1 car. And in GTD, Tony Vallander stole top spot. Right towards the end, last two or three laps from memory, Jack Hawksworth and the AIM Vassar Sullivan team in second with a time which was only 2 tenths of a second away. And then that Gar Robinson, Riley Motorsports, Mercedes-AMG GT3 time. Gar did his qualifying simulation early on in that, and that was good enough to hold third position even when some of the pro drivers came out later on. Pompelli for Team Hardpoint and Tilbechtelsheimer for Gradient Racing making up the top five. But frankly, from behind that Gar Robinson at time, everybody else was fractions of tenths of seconds. So that one, roll the dice, throw everything up and just see how it falls. The next time that we see these cars, it will be qualifying and we'll be setting the grid for the Cadillac Grand Prix of Sebring. Thanks very much to our VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Reporter, Shea Adam, and to Jeremy Shaw, who joined me, John Hindorf, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. A special thank you to all of our technicians who made everything work during that session, despite the world trying to turn against us, whether they were in London, Charlotte, or indeed anywhere else. Thank you very much indeed. That was the dress rehearsal then. Hopefully, we'll have no further issues when we come back in sound and vision for WeatherTech, IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship qualifying, and that's a little later on today. Check the schedules for details. Bye for now.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.